It's just a void and empty space.
Good evening. Welcome to the Library Commission meeting for February of 2021. I'm going to read a special announcement and then we will commence. So this meeting is being conducted utilizing teleconferencing and electronic means consistent with the state of California's Executive Order N2920 dated March 17th, 2020 regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. The live stream of the meeting is being viewed right now and is also available at the City of Goleta Channel 19 or online. We are continuing to take public comment, so please feel free to comment. We'll start with our call to order, which was right now. We'll do the Pledge of Allegiance and then we'll move on to the roll call. So we'll do pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States
of America
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
So I do know there's a little bit of a delay, so sorry about that for folks who are listening. So we'll do the roll call next, please.
Tara Gray.
Present.
Chair Peck.
Present.
Commissioner Peck.
Present.
Commissioner Goodman.
Present.
Commissioner Murray.
Present.
And Vice Chair Freeman is absent.
Thank you. We will now move on to the public forum aspect of our agenda. Do we have comments from the public?
There are no comments at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Ling. So we will turn to our consent calendar. As I don't believe that there are any amendments or adjustments to the agenda at this particular time. The first item on our consent calendar is 21040, approval of the meeting minutes from December 7th of 2020. Do we have any additions or amendments to these minutes? Seeing none, do we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Peck. And Commissioner Goodman seconded. We will take a roll call vote, please.
Chair Gray.
Aye.
Commissioner Goodman.
Aye.
Commissioner Murr.
Aye.
Commissioner Peck.
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move on to item B, which is a presentation from our director, Allison Gray, and please feel free to begin when you're ready. Nice to see you and Happy New Year.
Thank you, you too. Let me just start by saying that we are only four commissioners today because we are waiting for the county to appoint the commissioner that represents Isla Vista. This person has been chosen but has not been officially appointed yet. We're hopeful that he will be attending our March meeting. Also, I want to apologize for the fact that we don't have a budget report for you. The finance department is woefully understaffed. The staff member who used to prepare the report for the Library Advisory Commission left, and there's a hiring freeze. So we don't have a report for you this month, I hope, but I'm certainly not going to promise that we will have one next month, but we can always keep our fingers crossed. So this report covers both November and December, and our statistics for November are that we served circulated 10,752 items in November. This is down 77% from the previous November, which of course was back in normal times. So that is to be expected. We did help 1,715 people during sidewalk service. And again, our hours are 11 to 4, Wednesday through Saturday for sidewalk service. We did have 1,464 virtual views of 33 library programs, mostly children's, that we put on our Facebook page and Instagram. We had 300 uses of wireless that's accessible in the parking lot during certain hours of the day. So that's available 7 days a week for people that don't have computer access at home. They can come park in the lot and use that for a pretty wide number of hours each day. In December, we circulated 12,308 items, which oddly is more than in November, even though we were closed more days due to the holiday. It was down 73% from the previous December, which again is to have be expected due to COVID. We helped 1,896 people during sidewalk service. There were 28 library programs, and we had 1,717 views and 698 uses of wireless in the parking lot.
May I just interrupt to ask a question? Thank you so much. So how widely are you publicizing the Park and Connect program?
Do you mean the sidewalk service or the wireless service?
The wireless Park and Connect, yeah.
We haven't actually advertised that too much, but I think that we need to start doing it more so that people are aware of it. Some of the libraries keep the wireless on 24/7, but we were asked by the Sheriff's Department not to do that. We were asked to turn it off at 10 p.m. so there weren't people congregating in the parking lot overnight. So I think that maybe in the next library newsletter that we send out, we'll feature it, that it's available.
Thank you.
I also have a question. Yeah, it looked like there was a huge increase in the wireless usage from November to December, like so 300 to almost 900. And do you have a reason why that is the case?
I don't have a reason why that is the case. We were busier in December than we were in November for some reason. Not really sure why. Sometimes these statistics are just a mystery. Okay, so we had a situation occur in December, and it went through to January. So as you know, we are part of Black Gold, and one of the things that Black Gold provides us, the seven jurisdictions that participate, four in Santa Barbara County, one in Ventura County, and then two in San Luis Obispo. It provides, one of the things it does is provide us with a shared catalog, which is the Black Gold catalog, and we share materials between the seven jurisdictions. Of course, right now, because of COVID, we are not doing interlibrary loan, but during normal times, we share materials, and it's a wonderful thing for our patrons because they are not restricted to only the items that Goleta, Buellton, and Solvang own, but they can also borrow materials from Santa Barbara, SLO, which are the two largest libraries in Black Gold. But Ventura, the Santa Paula Blanchard Library, is known for having a collection that's very deep in older materials, older books. It just gives them much more access to many more materials. So that's one of the very most significant aspects of Black Gold. In December, both the City of Santa Barbara and the County of SLO abruptly notified everyone else in Black Gold of their intent to leave the shared catalog. because they stated they were unhappy with the Polaris library system that we all participate in. They felt that it was not patron friendly. The catalog was not intuitive. It was difficult to use. So Santa Barbara also wanted to not participate in sharing materials anymore. So this was concerning for a number of reasons, but mostly because of the not sharing materials. They talked about using other formats for interlibrary loan, but the format that they were talking about is one that each jurisdiction would have to pay to participate in, and B, we used to participate in this catalog, which is called WorldCat, and it cost a patron a minimum of $15 per item that they borrowed. So there would be a significant cost to patrons to participate in this ILL. So I spoke with my supervisor, Goleta Assistant City Manager Christy Schmidt, and she and our city manager discussed it. And Ms. Schmidt ended up speaking with each Santa Barbara council member about this and the deleterious effect that this would have on not only the other Santa Barbara County libraries, but all of Black Gold, who have shared materials since the Black Gold Cooperative was created in the 1960s. Not only would the rest of Santa Barbara not have access to the Santa Barbara Library's holdings, but Black Gold costs would rise significantly for everyone else. And this would hurt everyone's patrons. So the Santa Barbara Library presented their proposal to the City Council, and the result was that the Santa Barbara City Council was persuaded to continue regional cooperation until at least July 2022, while giving the Santa Barbara Library a chance to work with the rest of us in Black Gold to see if we can't come up with some sort of solution so that they can feel that they have the autonomy to make their catalog look the way that they want it to, but still continue to participate in resource material sharing. So one of the things that they and San Luis Obispo wanted to do was to go to this product called Aspen, which is an overlay that you can fit on top of Polaris and create your own catalog. You would still be seeing what other libraries in Black Gold had, but it enables you to make the catalog look the way you want it to look like for your patrons. And it's an excellent product. It also gathers in programs that your library is holding. It gathers in bibliographies that we have. So if you, for example, looked up LGBTQ as a subject, it would pull in the bibliography that we have of the materials on those subjects in along with all of the books and materials that we have on that, any programming that we were doing on that, any websites that we had tagged on our webpage. So it's a really great all-in-one sort of search engine for what we make available for our patrons, and we can really customize it. So we all agreed. San Luis Obispo asked if we would all be willing to use the Aspen overlay, and if so, then they would withdraw their previous stated plans to leave Black Gold's shared materials on July 1st of this year. So all of the other jurisdictions in Black Gold took time to look at Aspen, evaluate it, And we each ended up believing that it was indeed a very high quality program that would make things much better for all of our patrons, would allow each jurisdiction to customize it the way that they wanted to, and yet allow us to see each other's holdings so that we could continue sharing materials once we decide, you know, that COVID will allow us to do that. So we voted unanimously, although Santa Barbara was not at that meeting, that we would go to the Aspen overlay. And we hope that that will happen before July 1st, but it's just a matter of Black Gold working with the company that creates this software and how long that will take. And then it will take us some time working with IT to create the experience that we want our patrons to have. So it was great that SLO made that offer. It solved that problem. We also agreed to look at the computer system that both SLO and Santa Barbara were planning to go to, which is called COHA. And we're evaluating that. So we have committed to advocate with Black Gold for reasonable technology upgrades. The reason we are now interested in COHA is that although the first year cost would be larger than Polaris is, after that it would be less expensive than Polaris, our current system. It would be cloud-based so that we wouldn't have to deal with servers, maintaining servers through Black Gold. And apparently, although I haven't really had a significant time to spend with it yet, address some of the problems with Polaris. We will continue to address our net borrower status. We have a reputation for borrowing more than we loan out. However, in the year, the last normal pre-COVID year that we had a very determined strategy for purchasing items that were in high demand, not just by our patrons, but by all Black Gold patrons. And we were able to increase the number of items that we sent out to other libraries by 25%. So where prior to that, say we had borrowed 6,000 items a month from other libraries, we had sent out maybe 3,500, 3,000 to 3,500. It was sort of half and half. We got it up to 4,500 materials that we were sending out. So we brought it up by 25%. So we were borrowing 25% more items than we were sending out. We are committed. We're working on the next 2-year budget. We're putting in enough for the book budget so that we will be able to bring that up to 50-50, where we will send out the same number of materials that our patrons are borrowing. We have committed to that, because that perhaps will make Santa Barbara a bit more willing to share materials. And it will just even up the gap, because Goleta has always been borrowing more items than they have sent out. Yes. You're muted.
Yes, sorry, I have a couple questions. One is, so the Aspen overlay, I'm assuming that there's a cost for that. And can you talk about the discussions in terms of how that's going to be funded and how that's going to be split amongst all the different libraries?
It's a very inexpensive product. And so Black Gold does have funds set aside for technology upgrades. And so we made the motion to pay for the installation, which was the main cost, and pay for the first year of service. And after that, the administrator of Black Gold figured the cost might be about $5,000 per year per jurisdiction, which is very affordable for an extremely customizable product. And as we said, as I mentioned, if we do go to COHA as the computer, the integrated library automated service system, that will be significantly less expensive than the one that we are currently using, Polaris. So we will be able to use the savings from that to pay for COHA, for Aspen, I'm sorry.
And so I was also wondering if maybe in, you know, a future meeting, I would really like to see some screenshots about, so that I can get an idea of what you mean by it being, you know, more customizable. And I would appreciate that. And then my last kind of minor question is, you mentioned the system that Santa Barbara City really likes is COHA. And could you spell that, please? Because I'm having a hard time visualizing.
Sure. It's K-O-H-A.
Oh, that's not that hard. Okay, thank you.
And they are in the middle of, one of the concerns was that they're a relatively small company, but they're currently in the middle of doing, I believe, two transfers of Polaris systems over to the COHA system. So they will have experience in that by the time that we might be asking them to do a changeover for us. So yes, I will definitely get some screenshots from Black Gold. Are there any other questions about this? I know it's kind of complicated. No, okay. I think it's a positive move forward. And we just wanna make sure that we keep Black Gold healthy and that everyone continues to share materials as has been the practice for well over 50 years.
Okay. I actually do have a follow-up question. I'm sorry. So the city of Santa Barbara has committed to continuing with the program until the end of 2022?
No, all of our fiscal years start on July 1st. So they've committed to not seceding and having their own catalog until at least July 1st, 2022, because their city council wants them to be good neighbors, community collaborators, because this is a system that has worked very well for a very long time. And I believe there was the impression on a lot of people's parts that Santa Barbara sent out many more materials than their patrons borrowed. But I checked the state report and that is not true. They sent out 2,000 more items than they borrowed. So I can't see where participating in Black Gold sharing of materials is not of benefit to their patrons myself. That's just my opinion.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
When you said 2,000 more copies, out of what kind of total? I'm trying to figure out percentage-wise what that means.
This is off the top of my head, but it was over 100,000 items.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's a really, really small portion.
Yeah, it was not a significant number statistically.
That's great. Thank
you. We will keep you posted on that. Alrighty. So one of the main thing that we've been hearing from our patrons is that they miss being able to browse, particularly the new materials. It's been such a long time that they're starting to run out of books suggestions to read because they've read through all of their favorite authors. So my staff created grab and go bags, bags of different genres of paperbacks that are borrowed via the honor system. We always had racks of paperbacks that were not barcoded that people could take in case they didn't have a library card or they couldn't check things out because they owed too many fines or they were just visiting for a short period of time and wanted something to read. So we have them for children of all ages, teens and adults. So we created bags, historical fiction, romance, fiction, mysteries, and then mixed bags of fiction and nonfiction for adults. We have a couple of different genre bags for teens, and then we have bags for kids based on age. So we have picture books, easy readers, in-betweens, and then I think we have historical fiction and realistic fiction, I believe. And so patrons, when they come to pick up their holds, they just tell us what grab-and-go bags they want, and we deliver them. And they can keep the items as long as they want and then return them to us when they're done. It's working out extremely well. We're sending out about 3,000 books a month. It's great. I noticed from my office this past week, the UPS guys now are coming in and grabbing bags for all of for themselves and their coworkers, and so do the post office folks. And also the city public works guys, when they come here to fix something, they grab some bags as well for their families. It's really taking off, and it's a great way to help people find some new authors or genres. So we are continuing with that and have a new service involving the same idea, but using new books that are barcoded that we'll pick for people. And I will talk about that more next month after we have debuted it. We've been awarded $5,500 in an LSTA grant through the California State Library to develop STEM, which is of course science, technology, engineering, math, kits to provide learning opportunities for all ages in the Goleta community. This award will allow staff to create multiples of two themed kits, Sun Earth Moon Connections and Be a NASA Detective, Expanding Your Senses, which will contain all the materials and supplies needed to participate in activities that introduce and reinforce STEM concepts. This project, called Reach for the Stars, follows a blueprint created by the NASA and My Library program to connect NASA, public libraries, and their communities through hands-on activities and experiments. This is a great grant, and I'm so thrilled that we are partnering with NASA, because I am a huge NASA nerd, and I'm super excited about this. So our children's librarian applied for the grant, and so happy that she was awarded it.
I have a follow-up question on that. So, I mean, that sounds super, super exciting. And I was wondering, so are you distributing these to individuals, or are you maybe also coordinating with any of the local schools, or is it really just going to individuals?
I'm not really sure what our children's librarians' plans are yet, because we haven't received any of the materials. Mm-hmm. So it will depend what the materials look like. Whether they're better suited for individuals like families or you know, classes. So we're not sure yet. We're continuing our winter reading challenge, which began January 1st and goes through the 13th of this month. Simon & Schuster is sponsoring this. It's called Books Like Us. And Buellton and Santa Ynez are participating. It's a 6-week winter reading challenge. We in the past have done winter reading clubs just for adults, but Simon & Schuster created this reading challenge for children, teens, and adults, which we had to take advantage of, particularly now with COVID. It's an online program. It was always in person previously when we did the one for adults, but it's online through Beanstack, which is a website and an app that we used this past summer for the online summer reading program due to COVID. It makes keeping track of your the books that you've read really easy and fun. And the theme this winter, Books Like Us, invites readers to celebrate diversity and the power of seeing their stories reflected in books. So we're very excited about that theme. And we'll talk a little bit more about that theme in a little bit. Our local merchants, as always, have been amazingly generous in donating prizes for the program. People are getting amazing prizes this year. So these are some of the vendors who have donated amazing prizes. I don't know if you saw any of the media coverage about Maddie's treasure box there in the middle, but she's a young woman from Solvang who's created a nonprofit to get crayons and coloring materials to kids who need them. And I think she's only about 11 or 12, and she's raised a huge amount of money to do this. She's a remarkable young woman. And then we have more sponsors. So we're incredibly grateful to all of our local organizations for helping support reading in the community. We just couldn't do it without our community partners. We're very grateful.
Commissioner Peck.
I just wanted to say I heard Maddie and her mother speak at a rally in Solvang, and it's really quite a tale. It's very, very nice.
She's an amazing young woman. We're lucky to have her in our area. I was lucky last year, I was one of five librarians chosen from across the U.S. To participate on the Batch Elder Award, which is an award for the best book originally published in another language in another country, and then translated into English for United States readers. And it was wonderful. Our winner was this book called Telephone Tales, originally published in Italy, actually in the 60s. It's an absolute classic in Italy, fabulous book. And it was wonderful to read all of these books from all these different countries. I highly recommend it to you. The premise is that a traveling salesman has a young daughter, and it's back in the days of payphones, and she can't go to sleep without hearing a bedtime story. So he calls her each night with a short story that will be over within 3 minutes. And the illustrations are just fantastic. And you can tell the publisher really loves the book because there are fold-out pages and all kinds of things. So if you need to get a gift for a child, I highly recommend it. It's wonderful. And I'm so sad the committee has finished its work.
Congratulations, Director Gray.
Thank you, it was a thrill. December was Goleta's month to purchase e-audiobooks for Black Gold. During the year, three times each year, each jurisdiction has to purchase some items for Overdrive. So 1 month it's purchasing children's and YA materials, 1 month books, I should say. 1 month it's purchasing adult e-audiobooks, and then 1 month it's purchasing adult e-books. So I got to spend $4,200 on e-audiobooks. It was a lot of fun, and it didn't take long to spend, sadly. Now, speaking earlier about inclusion and diversity, next month, I'm going to report to you about the American Library Association Midwinter Conference, which I attended at the very end of January. And it was all about EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And so I'm very excited that the Goleta Library is partnering with UCSB Reads this year. And the title that they picked is When They Call You a Terrorist, written by the Black Lives Matter founders, Patrice Khan Cullors and Asha Bandale. And so we do have a number of copies that are going to be going out into circulation next week. The authors are going to be doing a virtual presentation sometime, I believe in March. We're waiting for the details from UCSB. We'll be doing a book virtual book discussion, of course, on the book here. So we're very excited about that. And we also received our third Book to Action grant from the California Center for the Book. And we decided to focus on equity. They had three themes that you could choose this year. So we got multiple copies of a wonderful graphic novel, which we thought would be great to do because we've never done one before as a book discussion. It's George Takei from Star Trek, graphic novel called They Called Us Enemy. It's an excellent book about how he and his family were interned in the American Japanese camps during World War II. And so we'll be focusing on inclusion and anti-racism programs throughout the year between March and through August. And so we have a number of programs decided upon for all age groups. We'll be doing book discussions with teens and adults on this title. And we are not going to be able to have Mr. Takei, but we will be having one of the illustrators of this book here to do a virtual program for our patrons. So we're very excited about that. And that is my rather lengthy report. Are there any questions I can answer? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, I really appreciate that.
Sure.
So our next item for presentation is 21030, and that is the presentation on the possibility of going fine-free.
Okay, I do realize that the presentation has a definite bias, and I just wanted to acknowledge that. I did search the library literature, websites, listservs, and blogs for pro-fine arguments and found one lukewarm argument, which I included as the last link on the list that I gave you that I'd like you to review sometime this month if you can before next month's meeting. I am totally open to your opinions, of course. And what I'm hoping is that I'm introducing this topic this month and that you'll do some of the homework that I've assigned you in those links that I sent you at the end of the presentation. And that next month we'll have a discussion on this. So I hate puns normally, but I was so happy with this visual pun, I had to do it. So we're quoting Shakespeare, to fine or not to fine, that is the question. And I don't know if you know the actor's last name. Joseph Fiennes. I had to do it, I'm sorry. Okay, so when I say the librarian, the word librarian, what's the first image that jumps to your mind? Those stereotypes are dated and inaccurate for today's librarians, yet for many people, they represent the experiences they had in libraries years ago. Behavior was strictly prescribed and rules were meant to be obeyed, such as bringing back your checked out materials on time. Years after the experience, people can still feel the shame of having overdue items and owing fines. I can't tell you how many cocktail parties I've been to, and when I've said I'm a librarian, the first thing they say is, oh, money, oh, I owe money. So people have a lot of fear about libraries because of fines. Historically, the theory was that if the library imposed a financial penalty for not returning books on time, patrons would be compelled to return their time, their items in a timely manner. However, as we all know, life gets in the way sometimes, and all of a sudden you've got overdue books. I have a very long overdue book right now. Patrons receive notices that they owe money and cannot use their library cards until they get their fines below a certain threshold. For us, I think it's $25. Many are at this point too embarrassed or afraid to bring in the materials, and they're ashamed to face the library staff. And this is awful for library staff. And it's awful for the patrons. It's very unpleasant. And sometimes they cannot afford to pay the fines. In the past, many have felt that charging fines is an important way to teach children responsibility. However, it's the parents generally who must transport the children to the library and pay the fines. If parents don't or can't do their part, we're penalizing children who have no control over the situation. And many of these children are in lower socioeconomic groups who most need the library. Numerous studies have been done in the last 10, 15 years that show that eliminating fines increased general goodwill between users and staff. Significant increases in the number of users and the circulation of books are usually experienced, and there's no increase in late book returns. San Diego went fine-free a couple of years ago, and their circulation went up something like 35%. Chicago Public Library System saw an immediate increase, both in returns of overdue materials, by more than 6 months. In fiscal year 1920, the Goleta Valley Library collected $12,667 in fines, which was slightly less than 1% of our 1920 revenues. And that was the last year before COVID. Now, during COVID, we have been unable to assess fines because our returns need to be quarantined for 7 days. So that was an issue. Our book drops were not open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for several months because we didn't have staff at the library and they couldn't empty the book drops. And we're hearing from many people that they are still avoiding errands just out of fear of COVID. So we could not figure out a formula for charging fines that was fair during this strange time. So we opted just not to assess fines. It was the most practical way of dealing with the situation. In a fines-free model, the library would still charge for lost items, generating revenue for materials replacement. And we have been still doing that during COVID. So the benefits of not charging fines. You retain access to the library for those who most need it. You save a lot of staff time processing fines, sending out mail, the cost of postage, all of that. You avoid unpleasant interactions, and you allow staff to foster positive customer service. The negatives, you are losing some revenue. And as I said, some people do strongly feel that this is a way to teach children responsibility. So I included for you 5 sites that discuss this topic. And as I said, I was unable to find even one article that was completely in favor of charging fines. The last one there from American Libraries Magazine in 2018 is a discussion between two librarians, one whose library doesn't charge fines and one whose library does. And it's interesting, and please read that one because it does include some pro-fines arguments, although how effective they are, you know, I will be interested to hear how you feel. So that is my presentation on fines, and I will be very interested to hear your discussion about it next month. And I hope that perhaps at the end of next month's discussion, we'll be able to come to some, you will be able to come to some recommendation that we can make to the city council, because we are working on the budget, the next 2-year budget cycle. Commissioner Murr.
Yeah,
I was wondering, so you're talking about eliminating the financial consequence of not returning library books. Are there any other non-financial consequences that would stay in place in terms of, for example, not being able to take additional materials out of the library? And if so, how does that work? Could you just describe that a little bit?
Right now, what we do is the maximum fines for any item is $8. And once you reach that $8, you stop accruing fines, and then a time clock starts. And you have a certain number of days. And if you don't return it within that number of days, you are then sent a letter that charges you for that item. So what we would do is 30 days from the time that item was due, the person would get a letter saying you're going to be charged for this item. So we would cut short that time period between the fees, the fines being accrued, and send the letter much earlier, so that hopefully that would be a greater incentive for people to return the item once they're being charged for the whole item rather than being charged the small fine amount. Usually what we experience is when people get that letter that they owe $25 for a book, they're much more inclined to find that item and bring it back.
And then just to follow up, sorry. So, but if you do that, you had said before that if there was a certain level of fines that they would not be able to take materials out of the library anymore. So is that still going to happen? And if so, when does that kick in?
Yes, well, we will have to figure that out. I think right now it's at $40, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So we will have to establish what level we're comfortable with.
Commissioner Peck.
I guess I have a couple of similar questions. So a book becomes a lost book after you send that letter and they say, I have no idea where it is?
Yes.
And then they're liable. Okay. Yes. I guess I have a different stereotype in mind. It's not the kid. It's the hoarder, you know, the person who doesn't realize there's a store called Chaucer's in town, you know, and who just hoovers up books. And I just wonder, anecdotally, of course, you know, do you run into that or?
I'm not sure what you're.
Well, I mean, people who just as adults, as a kind of force of habit, just don't return books.
Yes, we do run into that, sure. And there are certain situations where, you know, if there's an illness or a family issue, you know, we will waive the fines in certain cases. And the materials that we have, when someone checks out an item, it automatically renews 5 times. Unless someone else places a hold on it. So people can keep their materials for about 3 months before they become overdue. So, you know, it's mostly at that point a matter of they forgot that they had it. So just the reminder helps. But yes, it does happen.
Okay. And I just have one more question. You mentioned, I think it's $12,667. You know, it's less than 1%, but I guess what I'd like to know, you don't have to tell me now, but, you know, is that money, what can't be spent for that, and how might we make it up?
Yes, we're working on the next 2-year budget cycle right now.
Okay, but it sounds like there would be cost recovery through that lost item. Is that correct? I mean, you're not a fee, but when you're sent a letter that it's lost and you'll have to pay the full amount, you're anticipating that cost recovery will happen either through that payment or they will return the actual physical item.
Right.
And so these topics that we're looking at, I mean, is there that discussion there related to lost items and whether or not there's incentives in there related to those letters and, the statistics on, return rate? Is that addressed in these topics?
In a slight way, perhaps. They're more focused on the positive results afterwards in terms of increased circulation and increased customer use.
Okay. Commissioner Murr, did you have another question?
I did, and it's following on to your previous question. So I'm just trying to walk through the situation in my head. And the library, especially for very, very books that are in very high demand, there are some that you've classified that you can only take out for a week instead of, the typical 3 or whatever. Do you think that this will have any impact on that? And have you seen any literature regarding that?
We used to have books that you could only take out for a week, but we haven't had that since, it's at least 5 years. Everything we have, you can check out for 3 weeks.
Okay.
So if someone wants to places a hold on an item that someone has checked out, then their items don't automatically renew. They have a due date because someone else is waiting for that item. So we buy extra copies. That's part of our strategy for helping to make up that balance of borrowing more than we lend.
Well, I just want to say I was afraid to go to libraries for many years, probably from about fourth grade until I had kids and we would go to the library, because I was that borrower who didn't return the books, who as a kid lost track of them or loved them so much that I read them a million times and stained them and didn't want to give them back, and did not walk into a library until I had my mother-in-law taking my kids to the library. So I will read all of these resources, but I am very biased toward the no fine.
Excellent, thank you. Are there other questions? Okay, thank you. Thanks for that report. Our next item is future agenda items. So it sounds like we'll have a discussion and a decision on this at our next meeting. It sounds like, is that correct?
Yes, we will also have the, if our new commissioner is with us, we will have the election for chair and vice chair.
Yes, that was what I was next. So we'll have officer selection and election. Are there other items that you will have on the February agenda or the March agenda? When do we anticipate the budget?
It won't be next month. It might be March or April.
Okay.
We don't present to the council a final budget until perhaps May or June. I'm not sure if Janet knows the date. So it'll be later in the spring.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other items? Okay, it's 6:57, and if we don't have any public comment, Janet, is there any public comment at all?
There's no public comment at this time.
Thank you very much. So 6:58 now, we can adjourn the meeting. Lovely to see you all.
You too. Thank you so much. Good night.